Welcome to CS Radio.
All right, welcome everyone to episode 152 of CS Radio. It is our first live show with an audience.
Woo!
We are here today at the Platt Student Performing Arts House at the University of Pennsylvania. And Natty, this is a thrill.
Yeah, this is awesome. It's great to be in front of a live audience for the first time. I'm really excited.
Yeah, we've done some live streaming shows, but great to have a crowd. Thanks, everybody, for coming. And let's give a really warm pen welcome to our special guest, Kevin Curry of Fit Man Cook.
Hey. What up, everybody? What's up, Pin?
Kevin, we're so thrilled to have you today. And could you just start off? Could you just tell us a little bit about your background and how Fit Man Cook came to be?
Okay. First up, if you don't know me, my name is Kevin Curry. I'm actually from Dallas, Texas. Well, I should say this. I live in Dallas, but I was actually born in Philly.
Oh, hey, right.
Welcome home.
So welcome home. Yeah, I haven't been back here in almost 15 years. And immediately after this, I'm going to text my family members who are here so that way they know that I have touched down on soil.
All right.
Because I know I'm going to be in a lot of trouble. Moved to Texas when I was, I think, around 4 or 5. And so I grew up Texan pretty much, but also just loving, the roots back here. So I grew up with really good food in the house. I had soul food and Southern food and Mexican food. But also when I come back, I have my little Philly cheesesteak.
Nice.
And my little hot wings from the corner. So how did Fit Man Cook get started? It was around 2012. I started up this food blog, and it was just basically just to help me lose weight and to feel better about Kevin. I was at this point in my life, I was probably the most depressed that I had ever been. And I was broke as a joke. It started around 2008, 2009. It was right after the stock market had crashed. I was in grad school in Boston. Everything crashed and I had to go back home to live with my parents. Got on food stamps and everything, just trying to figure out life, bad breakup. Everything was just terrible. And I started to medicate with food. Remember, I grew up with good food in the house, so I knew how to make myself feel better. And most of my stuff was like binging at nighttime. And I think the turning point for me, there are two things that kind of happened. One was somebody posted this photo of me on Facebook. Now, this is back at the time where people could just tag you in a photo and it shows up on your feed and you're like, hey, untag me in that, bro. You know? And I was just looking extra greasy and juicy. So I was like, untag. And so I had never really seen myself in that light before. So that was just like, okay, there's that. And then I was just feeling really, really, really depressed and bad. And I reached out to some guy. This was around the time that I think Instagram had just started and it was growing in popularity. And I reached out to this guy to get help because he was one of those, what they're now, these massive fitness influencers. But this guy was pretty big for the time. So I reached out and he was going to charge me like this crazy amount of money for 4 weeks to help me to lose some weight. And I was thinking, no, first off, I can't afford it. But secondly, if he could figure it out, so can I. So yeah. I took myself over to Half Price Books and I just bought every single book there they had about nutrition. And I just began to devour the content, excuse the food pun, and just began just to cook for myself. And I didn't have any skills. I was just desperate. And desperation is a wonderful thing because it causes you to be super creative and resourceful in environments where you don't have all the tools and skill sets. And I went to social media to actually begin to share out every single meal that I was eating. So it was not this altruistic community that it is today in terms of helping people. I was just trying to help myself and to lose weight and not to break the bank in doing it. And I was sharing out every single meal that I was eating with all the macronutrients, the steps on how to make it. And I was taking foods that I really, really enjoyed like already and breaking them down and then and then putting in healthier or heart healthier like ingredients in them to cut the calories. And I was sharing that out. And I realized something. There are people out there just like me who were tired of the same old iceberg lettuce type of cookie cutter mold to fitness and wellness. And then my platform.
I hate iceberg lettuce in a cookie cutter mold.
I know.
That's my least favorite meal.
And I also hate it when it comes with their pizza and they put it on top of the pizza box and it sounds extra warm and slimy.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, and so that's how Fit Man Cook began. And I just started just to share more and more content. And I realized there are people out there just like me who want to feel good. Because I didn't think that it made a lot of sense where we could be on this massive, giant earth with these amazing cuisines around the world. And then they say, you can't eat that. It didn't make sense to me. So it, for me, it became a journey about how can I prepare these foods differently? How can I eat foods that I really love? How can I eat foods that I grew up loving, but also complement my wellness goals? Those things don't have to compete.
I will say I spent the last couple of days getting ready for this interview and looking at your site and getting real hungry, man.
Oh,
getting
thank
real
you.
Real hungry. Look great.
Thank you.
Well, you said several things that I think that are really great conversation starters, but since we are the Career Services Podcast,
yeah.
You know, the idea of turning what started in as just sort of a personal goal and a hobby then into a career, what was your career before you moved into being a social media personality?
Yeah, my career was working at Dell in like communications and marketing. I started out at 26, 25. I had done this project when I was, jobless with some friends. They went to Howard and they're MBA students and they asked me to come on and help them out with this marketing idea. I helped them out and it got some traction. And then and this senior manager over at Dell Services saw the work. He also saw that I had a background in consulting, and so he said, can you come on and help us to figure this out? And this is around the time where social media is still not a big like industry that
sure.
It is like today. And he asked me to come on and be the manager of social media for Dell Services, which is their like consulting division. So that's what I was doing, and then I got promoted out of that into Dell Corporate doing that. And then by the time I quit my job to do Fit Man Cook, I was Dell's. I mean, I was like a star employee. And then I became Dell's best mediocre employee. I'm not even going to lie.
As your priority changed.
As my priority changed. I was like, oh my God. I remember at one point, I can't believe I'm saying this out loud, but there's one point Dell was laying off people. And they were giving great severance packages.
And you were like, come on,
oh,
baby.
Oh, my gosh. And I was like, well, let me just lean into this mediocrity a little bit more. And my boss comes to me. He says, you know, we were going to let you go, but you've been such a great employee in the past. I was like, no. One of my
Damn
6 months.
Damn you, past Kevin.
But I'm glad for that because oftentimes I feel like we look for signs for things to feel right, for us to jump and take that
Absolutely.
Leap. And that's what I was doing. Like, if they let me go, this is the sign. But really, the sign that I needed was for me to get tired, to get ready, to bet on myself. And that's what I did. It was like a year later that I quit my job.
Yeah, and tell us about that. What was, because it can be very brave and scary to move away from
yeah.
something that feels stable, corporate, you're getting a paycheck every month and really easy, frequent payments. What was it like to make that leap into the unknown of what you were doing on your own?
It was frightening because I don't come from a family with a lot of money, and then there's nobody in my family that's doing like entrepreneurship. So I always tell people, you know, you have to balance faith and foolishness, because I feel that sometimes we can blur the lines, so you do need to have some sort of a plan. But it was very scary. But here's this talk, and I always share this with people because it's one of those like, you know, like defining moments. But I walked into my old boss's office, and this is guy. He's from Alabama. He's really really big personality, and he's got this really thick Southern accent, which helps out when people are giving you advice from a Southerner, you know. And I walk into his office, and at the time, Google had seen some of the growth of the Fit Man Cook platform, and so they reached out and they gave me a job offer. I had flown down there and everything, and I was like, oh my God, it was making so much more money than I was making at Dell, and it's Google, you know?
Yeah.
And I walked into his office to try to get, you know, like to get some advice. And he says, "Well, Kevin, everybody here in this office is talking about this thing called Fit Men Cook. I don't know what the hell it is, but I can tell you this. You walked away from our company 3 years ago, and I'd hire you back today. So here's my advice to you. The fact that you got an offer from Google and you're asking me means that you don't want to take that offer. So here's my advice. You want to be able to sit your grandkids down on your knee one day and say, here's this thing called Fit Men Cook. Here's how I effed it all up, or here's how I did it well. And what that experience taught me is that a couple things. First off, it's time to bet on me. And if my old employer is actually saying that they would hire me back, then that says something about my capacity to be able to go ahead and get another job and to maneuver, which is something that some people can't do. Secondly, what he said about telling my kids or whomever afterwards, like, here's how I did it well, or here's how I messed it up, it was, he basically said, you don't have to wonder what if. And I think it's the what ifs that actually cause us the most anxiety. It causes us the most depression when we're stuck in a job. What if I had done this? What if I had said yes? What if I had said no to this? What if I walked into it? What if I bet on myself? And so that moment, something kind of clicked and said, I just need to go ahead and do it.
That's amazing. What an amazing boss to give you that support and that put that idea in your head.
Yeah, you know, I'd never really thought of it that way, to be honest, just because growing up, I wouldn't say broke, but we were on the cusp. We were broke adjacent. And also just working in corporate America and being a black man in America with not that many people that look like me around, you know, the maneuvering looked different. And here this white man was just telling me to be fearless. And I'm like, you don't really know what that, yeah, it's really easy for you to say in a very comfortable position. But when he said that, though, I just kind of got like emboldened, and it was that same type of righteous indignation that I had when that trainer was trying to charge me, like tons of money. I'm like, this fool can barely put a sentence together. Kevin, you could figure this out too. and no shade to him. It was just more like, hey, you've gotten all these wonderful experiences. You're able to go to great schools and whatnot and have a good job. You can figure this out. And when he said that, I'm like, yeah, I need to figure this out too. I can go and bet on myself. So as much as it was scary, I heard this pastor once say, sometimes you've got to trust and tremble at the same time. So I'm going to step out there and I'm going to do what I can. And at the same time, even though I'm fearful, I'm going to let that fear kind of help me to grind a little bit harder.
And talk to us about how that motivation to kind of do this stuff on your own, how did that evolve over time? One of the first things I did last night, scroll down to the very bottom of your YouTube channel, looked at nine years ago, first video you posted. How have things changed, and what was it like having everything on yourself, from saying, I'm going to put all this together, I have the ideas, I have the marketing expertise, I have the video, I have the editing. What was that like at the start, and how has it evolved to today?
You know, I wish I could say that like it was really calculated, like everything was, but honestly, I kind of stumbled into a lot of things. And I wouldn't say luck, but it was just kind of figuring things out. I wish I could say that I had like this plan that, all right, I'm going to go ahead and do this, but it was in the doing where stuff began to make sense and to have clarity. So I always tell people and young creators or just anybody in general, you can spend a lot of time planning stuff out. You could spend a lot of time trying to get the perfect PowerPoint presentation together for your business, but there's nothing like just going out there and doing it. And sometimes in the doing, that's when you start figuring out stuff.
I think that really shines through in your videos. So Natty went and looked at your oldest. I was looking at some of your most recent, and what I liked is that they have a real authentic, you keep some mistakes, you know, you're joking around with your cameraman. I really feel like I'm just spending some time with you, and it's, you know, it's very polished and professional, but it's not, you know, it's not like when you're on the Today Show, right? Yeah. It's not super polished. There's that little bit of like, hey, we're all human. We're having some fun and we're cooking some dinner.
Right, and that's what wellness is. It should just be an experience. It's a journey. It's a learning process. I think that the more that we give these manicured glimpses of our lives, the less authentic that we actually become as a society, and also the less happy we become. But it's like, you know what? I flubbed that. I really screwed that up. And let's laugh about it and move on. And I think in sharing that, I think people can feel connected to that, because all of a sudden they're like, you know what? I did the same thing. And it's much more relatable. And I'm not trying to put on for anybody. I'm still discovering things about myself, about my mental wellness, about my physical wellness, each and every week. And I literally mean week. So me sharing that is just my way to, you know, just to be a part of the conversation that is wellness in the world, to showing people that, you know, that change is possible, and that you don't have to have you don't have to have the perfect scenario to make a decision to take hold of your life. And also this is one thing that I really want to shine through, is that I'm not an absolutist whenever it comes to wellness and whenever it comes to diets and foods. I think you can embrace a whole lot of different things, and I think that you should. I think that you should enjoy it. But there's no right, direct path. And I want that to be known. I want that to be shared, because we live in a society now, because of digital technology, that everything happens right away. We want everything right now. So because we want everything right now, we think wellness comes that way. That's why we get six-pack abs in 6 weeks. That's not true. That's usually, you know, and if it is true, maybe there's just some other stuff kind of going on, or six-pack abs in like 5 days, right? But here's the thing about that. We're not teaching people how to maintain their wellness. So they may get what they want for that short time, but I guarantee you those same people are in my inbox asking questions later on.
You've talked so much about authenticity, and I'm also thinking back to your reaction to your boss, you know, saying, you know, like, you know, put yourself out there and fail or not, and how you saw that as him talking from the position of privilege. And so I'd like to talk about how much does representation, and you're wearing an amazing shirt for our podcast audience who can't see, he's got a great sweatshirt, says the black man can. So how much does that, is that a conscious thing when you're making your video and writing your blog, or is it just because it's who you are, it's just part of the experience, or do you put a lot of, like, does it really play an active part in your personality online?
I think all those things are true. So what I'll say is that in this space, absolutely, I want that to be known a lot more. And it didn't really come into play. I really didn't understand it until maybe like my second year into like jumping out there on my own. And it came into play with this, that like I got this offer to be in this national commercial, this campaign with this amazing brand. And they watched some stuff and they said, oh my God, this is the talent that we want. So I'm just like, holy smokes, it's great. And then I got a call later on when I was about to start filming, and they said, hey, you know what? We're just gonna get another talent, you know, just to help to balance it out. Mm. And as a black man in corporate America, and as a black person in America in general, I knew what that meant. I was like, I bet that person's white. And when I showed up, it was a blonde-haired, blue-eyed white woman. And no shade to her, but she had not had a lot of time in front of the camera. And I wasn't, again, I'm stumbling up on this stuff, so me being in front of the camera myself, it actually made me a lot more comfortable in doing some, like, local media stuff. So when they put her on camera, she just didn't perform as well. And the directors made it very well known, and so they weren't as kind. And we were over about like 2 hours above schedule just because of her, right, because of her part. And I'm sitting there like in the waiting room, and she comes in, and I was like, well, congratulations on finishing. I'm trying to be really nice, yada, yada. I had looked her up online too, because I just wanted to know like who she was. For all intents and purposes, I had at least 5 times the amount of following and influence that she had, you know. And she said, oh my God, yeah, I'm so excited because they gave me this, so how could I pass it up? they had given this woman the exact same amount of money that they gave me, and they told me that it was based off of your following. So I know we can go back and forth and be like, well, women get paid more and blah, 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 you know, all that. No, that wasn't the case. Especially when they came back and said that it's all about balancing it out. So then I knew that there was a representation issue within this wellness space. And so since then, I changed up a lot of my energy and tried to be a lot more inclusive and making sure, showing my face more in some of the videos to make sure that people knew. And when I wrote my cookbook, they had a live feed to New York as we were filming the cookbook and, you know, photographing it. And the editor hops on the phone with the photographer and said, hey, can you tell Kevin, hey, we're seeing a lot of photos with his hands in them with the food. And so I said, yeah, correct. And she said, well, yeah, can we get some without? And I said, that's fine. You can get them and they can be for your own, like, whatever you want to use them for. But for this cookbook, I want my hands in there. First off, I want to show people that it's an action-oriented cookbook. But also, at the end of the day, when my book is somewhere in a half-price books and somebody comes up and picks up this healthy cookbook, I want them to know that a black man made the recipes in this book. Because there's this perception that wellness and eating better is not something that the BIPOC community really cares about. And it's because of the lack of representation in this area that that type of mentality is really pervasive. So yes, in recent times, especially much more in recent times, I lead with that because I do think it's important, because I want other kids that look just like me to know that it's amazing to eat well, that you can incorporate spices and flavor, the stuff that we grew up eating, but do so in a calorie conscious way.
That's amazing. It's really powerful. I don't have a question to follow up on that, but I do have a comment. I loved watching just looking over all your content, because you do a great job of you find an intersection between all of these things. You incorporate social justice, history, wellness, fitness, all within the realm of cooking at the same time. And I just think that's so, so powerful in how you go about your content.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
So I'm wondering if you could offer to our student audience in particular any advice if they're thinking about going into a career online. It's something that, you know, as career counselors, we're starting to deal with. You know, maybe 3 years ago, I had the first student come in the office and say, I want my career to be YouTube.
Yeah.
And everybody went, oh yeah, I guess that is a thing now.
Yeah.
And like, so we have to adapt to learn about that as an industry.
And there's not a job application necessarily.
That's right. It's really putting yourself out there. There's that entrepreneurial spirit.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's the beauty of it. So first off, the person that comes into your office that says that I want to do something on YouTube, maybe they're not ready just yet, because the ones that I know who really want to be on YouTube, they already are.
Exactly.
And so when you really want to be on something, you don't need anyone's permission to go and do it. So just go and do it. Now, what I will say from a business standpoint, if they're coming in there and being like, hey, I got this following, I'm building it up, how do I turn this into a career? That's a different question. What I would tell them is this, first off, find the small ways that they can begin to monetize right now, even while they're in school. And then factor in like, all right, if you're only spending like this much amount of your time and you're making this amount of money, then just continue just to put more and more and more into it. Now, if I could do things over again and just wipe the slate clean, I would not spend so much time building someone else's dream. And what I mean by that is like working with brands as much. I think that there's a lot more potential for you to monetize off your audience with stuff that you actually care about. It's going to be hard because you need money for that. You need investment. You need time and energy. It costs a lot more. But in the end, having your own product, having your own stamp on something is far more lucrative than anything else you could ever do.
That's amazing. And the human approach, which goes back to a lot of things that you said about embedding your own personality and making sure that people see your hands. There's a human behind all of these things that you're seeing.
Yeah, that's a really good point too. I think a lot of times people get caught up in the content space and they think, oh, okay, like for instance with the food space, I was talking to a lot of like food bloggers, and oftentimes they don't like to show their face. They just want the focus to be on the food. And I said, and that's completely fine, but people still want to be connected to the person behind the food. So incorporating a lot more of your story is really beneficial.
What was helpful for you practicing? Because when I looked at that very first video that you posted, mm-hmm. I was impressed that you had it already right away. You had the camera presence. It already existed. It wasn't like sometimes you look at the beginning of someone's YouTube video, especially one of like yours, where you have so much of it, and you can tell they're still not comfortable being in front of the camera. What was it like for you getting to a point, or did it truly come naturally, or were there things that you did to help with that?
Heck no, I was terrified. In fact, that's why I'm looking at you when you said this is a great video. I'm like, really?
I was because
really I looked like deer in the headlights the whole time. Like, ugh. And you know, some context, I think that I was one of the early healthy food vloggers out there putting music to videos, and that was only because when I was walking all the way through the video, I was making so many mistakes I didn't know what to say and do, and I was like, you know what, we're gonna put on Little John in the background and just and just do it like this with the hands. And that's how that came. And so I just think over time you become a lot more comfortable, but you're gonna be, you know, you feel weird and you feel squeamish and everything else, and you're gonna hate the way that you sound and look. And true story, I probably don't watch about 80% of my content.
It's hard for me to listen to our podcast.
It is. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know a lot of people that feel that way when they're making their own content.
Yeah.
I personally love the sound of my own voice. I want to make sure that we have time to have our audience ask some questions, so I'm gonna ask Sarah to unmute our audience mic, and please don't be shy. I'm going to ask Kevin a question to get us started, but if you have a question, please just come up to the audience mic here, and we'll have Kevin answer it for you. So what I wanted to ask you, Kevin, was obviously this started out as something you were doing for yourself and by yourself, and then over time it's grown. How big is your team now?
Oh God, not that big. I keep a very lean team. I've got my manager, operations manager / assistant, and then my videographer. And then I'm all about contract work. So finding good talent, which is something that y'all should really be thinking about doing, both if you're trying to grow a business, but also just want to make some extra money. I use platforms like Upwork to find amazing, great talent. So I found my writer that way. I found designers that way. And it just allows me just to be a lot more nimble and flexible in making, like staffing decisions. So you can actually go to scale as a small company without actually having an actual corporation.
Nice. And I was thinking about, we had an episode a few weeks ago where one of our colleagues said, you know, I'd really love to be a social media influencer. I think that would be fun, and I think it'd be easy too. And Michael and I thought, I don't know if people would agree with that. How would you say, what do you think is the most challenging part of getting to the place of where you're at now? That was like the biggest hump that you kind of had to get over first.
Well, I can talk about, I think, where I am right now. It's hard to, thinking of maybe, which is actually kind of the same thing. I think the biggest hump that I had to get over is being interested after all this time, if that makes a lot of sense.
Staying passionate.
You got to keep that passion going for it. And even though I'm a lot older than the people here, I still consider myself, I guess I'm like on the cusp of not being a millennial. Or whatnot.
I'm an elder.
I'm uncle millennial, right?
Well, great. I'm grandpa millennial.
Okay. And I was, in that time frame where you stay at a job for maybe 2 to 3 years and keep bouncing. And I told someone, I was like, oh my God, Fitman Cook is my longest job I've ever had. And so just finding new things that actually keep me inspired and passionate about the work, I think that's the biggest hurdle. As well as when you're an entrepreneur, I definitely don't take enough time for myself because I'm constantly like, oh, I got to get this goal. I got to get this. And I'm literally just focusing on that. And so it's crazy to think, but my health and wellness takes a backseat at times because of that in the pursuit of my goals. And so I've had to kind of reconcile that like type of hypocrisy, I feel like, with telling everybody else, you got to take care of your mental wellness, got to take care of your body. And behind the scenes, mine's just going to shreds because I'm really focused on my goals. So I guess if I could sum it up in maybe a word or two, it'd probably be understanding and learning balance.
Yeah, it's not a traditional 9-to-5. You're almost always on. You're always working in a position like that. Yeah.
It's your livelihood. It's how you eat. Keep the lights on.
All right. Well, I do want to open it up to any audience questions. Anything for Kevin about his career or his... Yes, Jackie, could you come up to the mic, please?
So this is so exciting, and I wanted to think you actually answered some of my questions about how do you stay motivated and balanced, but I did want to ask, how do you cut through the noise as you receive opportunities or contracts or folks saying, hey, do you want to do this? Or you want to partner and do this? Or you want to invest in this? Or like, how do you stay focused? Like, what's your strategy for, do you have a five-year goal or a five-year plan, a strategic plan? Like, how do you... how do you use discernment, I guess, and wisdom when determining, like, what's your next step or who you partner with or, like, what you do?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I have my own personal ones, and me and my manager, I just started to, open that up to him to kind of help us to stay on track. But in terms of understanding which opportunities... Now, I wish I would have gotten this before, but I have the gut check, to be quite honest with you, because some stuff just doesn't feel right. And when I feel like as a creator and as a creative, you're really good at storytelling. And you could really tell yourself, oh, you can really just tell the story about why this is like a good thing. But in your heart of hearts, you're knowing that it's not. And so it's listening to that gut a lot more. And realizing, because I feel that we can doubt that, and I deal with imposter syndrome a lot. I feel like my therapist is helping me out with that, which is another thing we can talk about later on. You need to be in therapy.
We talk about imposter syndrome all absolutely. The time in our job.
And so realizing, all right, Kev, you can't in one sense tell this story about how you had to bet on yourself, and then in this situation right here, you're not. So if that gut kind of got you to where you are right now, you need to continue to go ahead and trust that. A person, I can't believe I'm even saying his name, because I don't agree with a lot of the antics, but I do look at a lot of his behaviors. And there are some key learnings that you can take from even people that don't agree with you. But I look at Kanye West oftentimes in the way that he moves in certain things. There's something that's inspiring about seeing someone who is betting on themselves, regardless of how ridiculous it may be, and trusting his gut and things kind of working out. There's an asterisk-ness to that, but it is, take it for what it's worth. And when you write things down, too, about like where you want to go, it's very clear where you can say, this is not pushing me closer to that. And you've got to be able... at that point, because then it's not even, I feel like oftentimes for me, it's not even a question of like, should I be doing this? Is I know darn well that this is not pushing me closer to this goal over here, but it's right here in my hand. So it's literally the same thing with diet. Should I get up and cook myself a meal that's gonna be better for my wellness? Or can I just go over here to this fast food joint and get it? It's right here. It's only $2. But it's those decisions, it's the incremental decisions like that, that ladder up to where you want to be.
Any other questions from our audience for Kevin?
Hi, I was actually wondering, and I thought of this because you were kind of talking about mental wellness and sort of that dichotomy that can happen. I feel like we've seen a lot of content creators and social media presences talk about the difficulty of like separating their persona from like their actual self. And like, have you faced that? I imagine so many years of experience that sometimes it can be hard to like separate who you are in front of the camera versus who you are in real life.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I personally have not dealt with this idea about being a different persona online than I am offline. What I deal with primarily is, am I comfortable being vulnerable and sharing that stuff behind the scenes? Because I think that people, because God, social media is such an incredible thing to connect us all, but it's also a really bad thing because people forget about the proximity thing. Like, if we're face to face right now, you're not gonna say something that's pretty awful. At least I don't think that
God,
you would.
I hope not.
About like me and my mental wellness and whatnot. But when you're behind a computer screen and you're not seeing that person,
yeah,
it's much easier to go ahead and do that. So two things. Yes, I have seen creators really fall like prey to that. And as an uncle in the game now, I have a lot of people that come to me like offline and we'll talk through that. But the main thing for me is, do I feel comfortable sharing a lot of the intimate details about my own like mental wellness? One, because I feel like, oh my gosh, sorry.
No, take your time.
This is where we edit the podcast.
I know. You got to edit this out as I get emotional about it. And it's very personal. And so I don't try to put that on anyone. If they don't want to share, you don't have to share. But also, I feel like it's really comfortable for me to talk about eating, right? Because since I went through that, I feel like I have the power to actually help you and talk you through those changes. And because I feel like I'm in places where I have not, where I would love to feel and be with my mental wellness, sometimes I shy away from doing that. I shy away from doing it because I feel like, again, an imposter. I feel like I'm not allowed to go ahead and do that. So that's the thing that I struggle with the most. Like, ooh, I really want to share this because I think it's a key learning that I'm learning, but I also don't want to share it and make it seem as if I'm in a much better place than where I really am.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I really appreciate it. And we have reached the end of our time here together, but Kevin, this has been an amazing conversation.
Thank you.
I think you should know, if you don't, that you have definitely touched a lot of lives. I told a friend of mine that you were going to be on the show, and she freaked out. She was so excited. And the first thing this morning, I got a text from her, and she was like, "Today's the day!" So you've
awesome.
You have a wide reach out there, and we thank you so much for sharing your experiences with us. And thanks to our audience, and thanks to the great staff at Plastic Performing Arts House. It's time for lunch. We'll see you all next time on CS Radio. Thank you very, very much.
This podcast is presented by University of Pennsylvania Career Services, a division of University Life.
It was created by Meenland Kushner and J. Michael DeAngelis.
It was produced and hosted by J. Michael DeAngelis and Natty Leach, and mixed and edited by Sam Pasco. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or wherever you're listening. See you next time on CS Radio.